go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, Scott. We are in the thick of it, my friend.
The thick of what?
Well, I'm glad you asked. The thick of Shark Week.
Yes, we are. You're right. You know what? I love Shark Week. I really do. I've been a fan of it for like 20 years. We've already talked about this.
Yeah, you mentioned this.
I love Shark Week. I truly do.
And you know what? I believe you. I really enjoy it as well. When I was a kid, I didn't have the luxury of watching Shark Week. And so I didn't really know that much about sharks. And so for a while, for probably a good solid 2 summers, I was just terrified of beaches. I had no idea. I knew
no
there
kidding.
Was something, beaches, sharks, yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Oh. I still find myself, you know, beyond, I don't know, waist level in the ocean, I find myself looking around, you know, at a distance from me for that shape coming towards me.
Yeah, but that's the thing about sharks, man. Even if, you know, I feel as though Shark Week is just giving us an excuse to kind of fanboy out over sharks, because even though they are predators, they're so well designed, man.
Yeah.
They're really, really, oh God, you know,
efficient.
Yeah. I told myself I was going to be articulate, but the best I can think of is they're really cool.
Yeah, they are.
I know
they're,
it's kind of lame.
No, that's not lame. They are. They're just super efficient machines. Really, they're awesome.
They have dead eyes, and that's kind of creepy. But you know, other
did you
than
get that from Jaws?
Jaws?
Dead eyes? Maybe.
I actually got that from seeing the whale shark when I went to the aquarium here in Atlanta. Have you ever been there?
I have. Those are impressive fish, I'll tell you that. They're the size of a bus.
Yeah, they're huge.
They're enormous. They're very impressive. I could stare at those things forever. And they only come by once in a while, it seems like, when you're standing in that clear tube looking up, you know. But you're, every time they come over, I'm excited by them.
And one thing that we can draw, I guess, a parallel to, I was trying to think of things in the automobile world or in the vehicular world that are kind of like sharks, and just in the coolness factor.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, of course, the first thing you think of, concept cars, right?
Sure, yep.
And then what's cooler than a concept car?
Nothing.
That's, wow, yeah.
No, go ahead.
There wasn't even a dramatic pause.
Yeah.
I would say maybe, we'll see if you go with me on this crazy journey that becomes a conversation, maybe a concept hovercraft.
That is pretty cool. And there is one, and what do you know? It's named the Audi Shark Concept.
The stars are aligned.
Isn't that something?
Yeah,
it's funny how that worked out for us like that, right? Anyways, it was good news for us because we do want to talk about sharks this week and cars, which is, I don't know, kind of fun. I've been having a good time with this. So
this is cool, yeah.
So anyways, there's an Audi Shark Concept vehicle, which is, I'll call it a vehicle. It's a hovercraft. And it's really, really cool design. You've seen this, right?
Yes, and it looks like it's from science fiction films, honestly. It's a very, very unique looking vehicle.
It does. And right now it's just, you know, it's on paper or, you know, electronic rendering. You know, it's not reality, but it's an interesting idea, and it may be where someone, you know, somewhere that, you know, Audi may want to go. I don't know. I just don't know if it's even possible or not. But interesting design again. It was designed by a 26-year-old who lives in Turkey.
Yes.
And he actually won a contest. This is his third design winning entry, I guess. He's designed other vehicles for Peugeot and another one that he designed. It was a doorless, a no-doored concept called the Ka design. And again, another prize winner. So he's 26 years old. He's won 3 automotive design prizes already. And this one from Audi is it's a big one. This is a big international competition.
Yeah.
And I guess he got a scholarship, a 70% scholarship to the Domus Academy, which is in Milan, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, he says that even with the 70%, he just can't afford the other 30%, and he's going to have to turn down this opportunity for a master's program in automotive design, which is sad because here you've got someone who's clearly talented in this field, and he just doesn't have the ability to get, you know, to where he needs to be to make it happen. So
yeah, it's a shame. I read about that. Do we have his name on there?
Yeah, his name is.
See,
I knew you were going to do this
to me. I'm sorry. Do you want me to do it?
No, you could try if you want.
But I'll try after you.
Kazim Doku.
Kazim Doku.
Yeah. Kazim Doku is his name.
Okay.
And he lives in Turkey. I think that's close.
Yeah.
And so, forgive me if I'm wrong, but.
You know. Yeah, Kazim, we're sorry if we're wrong, but please, please forgive us because, man, we like this concept so much that we're on air plugging it. I would just say to any of our listeners there who feel like funding 30% of someone's education in Milan, this guy might be your top pick.
Oh, man. That's a good idea because this guy, he's got something happening here, I'll tell you that. The car is interesting. Or the hovercraft is interesting. You should check that out, really. Seriously different than a car, though. I mean, I don't know if you saw this or not. We didn't talk about this beforehand, but the seating in this vehicle looks especially comfortable to me. It looks like you've got your legs raised in front of you almost. You're reclined.
It's a lazy boy.
Oh, it looks really, really comfortable. I wish we could have a car that would have seating like that, you know, something that right now you could drive or get in and drive.
I feel like we would fall asleep.
Maybe. It looks supremely comfortable.
Yeah,
I'll tell you that.
It really does.
So check it out. But there's a lot of really interesting things happening. LED lights. It's got this kind of a cockpit canopy opening door. It's hinged at the front, I think, so it opens at the back. And just interesting. It's really, really cool. It's got this big airfoil in the back. It looks like a fin back there. It must be for stability.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it's interesting design. You should check it out. And there's even a rendering of this thing that, a computer graphic that, you know, shows you a little bit of motion, this thing moving around a bit. It's fascinating.
But we can't really have people going to check this out on the internet without knowing what it is, because we've been throwing around the term hovercraft. We haven't really been exploring what a hovercraft is and how it works, right?
Yeah, that's right. We can do that, I guess, fairly simply, really. Hovercraft have been around for a while. They're not. I don't know the exact date of the first hovercraft or anything like that, but they are in use. You can buy a small hovercraft for yourself, a personal hovercraft, I guess. These were popular. I lived in Michigan near a lot of the little lakes, and I wouldn't say wildly popular, but there were a few around. Kind of things where you'd have maybe a bench seat in the middle, and two people would sit, you know, one in front of the other one with a I think it was like a handlebar control. And
they have the big fan on the back.
It really did. And the rubber skirt that went around the bottom. But what made them popular up there was because it was going from smooth ground to smooth ground. Really, it was going. You could go from ground to water or ice, and it had no problem. You could go from one to the next, and of course, being near a small lake, that would be beneficial. Yeah. Now, you couldn't stop in the middle and float like a boat, I don't think. I believe you had to keep moving once you're out on the lake. Not that it wouldn't, but it was just kind of a fun thing to tool around in, you know. And I know I saw several of them up there. Interesting vehicle, though. So we should talk about how they operate. Because,
what's going on there?
Well, they're real simple. There's not much to them. There's a body. You know, it could be whatever material, plastic, metal, whatever. Probably plastic for weight at this point. There's an engine which drives a fan which is used for thrust at the back. It's kind of like you know, those big airboats that you see with the big fan at the back.
Yes,
similar, maybe a little bit smaller. Depends on the size of the boat, I guess. But the one I'm thinking of had a smaller fan, and the engine also drives. It brings in air into the fan. The fan creates not only thrust air, but it also creates lift air, which is pushed underneath the vehicle. And then held in place by this plenum or this skirting material, and I've heard this described as cloth material, but it looks like rubber. It looks like heavy rubber.
It always looked like rubber to me.
Yeah, they said it's cloth. I've read other places where they say it's cloth, but again, that engine is driving a fan, which then creates thrust air and lift air. And lift air, of course, keeps the vehicle up, and it could be as much as, you know, 6 inches, 8 inches, 10 inches, whatever. Depends on the size of the vehicle, how much lift you need. They're big vehicles that carry a lot of people and materials and even cars, heavy things like that we'll talk about later. But for these small vehicles, one engine is typically enough. Some have a separate engine just to create lift air, you know, with separate rotors that just drive air down for lift. And that's necessary when you have a lot of weight. And again, then there's a steering, of course, which is usually like a handlebar control. But really all you're doing is you're just reducing or removing that surface tension and allowing this thing to move around. And then it's the thrust that moves you or drives you. And you steer it with like a rudder control to back, like those jet boat or fan boats that we've talked about.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we talked about, you mentioned the personal-sized ones, mm-hmm. which, you know, I can't help but think this is a terrible comparison. But it reminds me of how in some pizza joints you can get a tiny pizza that's for one person, you know, and you move up in size. So is there a medium or a large in hovercraft terminology?
Or? Oh, yeah, there definitely are. That's
really?
An interesting analogy. I'm glad you brought pizza into this, though, because I love pizza. But
thanks.
That aside, you can get every different size of these things. Now you can even get remote control hovercraft, which are really cool. I've seen a few of those. You know, digging around for information on this, I may or may not have spent a little bit of time watching some remote control vehicles.
RC hovercraft,
maybe. Yeah,
hovercraft.
I mean, it was all, you know, I'm dedicated, Ben. So
sure,
you know, research. You know, sure. I had to. I really had to watch several minutes.
You had to take one for the team.
Right? RC controlled. Yeah, it was interesting stuff. It's pretty funny.
I appreciate your dedication.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the extreme end of this, though, there's a big hovercraft. There are several of these, really. You may have seen the one that crosses the English Channel. Have you?
I have heard about this.
Okay, they're retired now.
Okay.
But if you've seen them in action, they're pretty impressive. They're huge. They're designed to carry 287 passengers and 37 cars at the same time.
Jeez.
These are big. And they cross the channel. I guess it's faster than the train that goes underneath. They call it the Channel train.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, this just made the run between, I think it was Dover and Calais, France, is what it said. And the speed, it's pretty fast, 70 knots.
Oh, wow.
And it can handle 10 feet of water, which I believe that means 10 feet of, because you're not talking about depth of water, of course. That
right.
has no bearing on
this
at all.
Yeah.
You're talking about swells,
yeah.
10-foot swells. Now, that's pretty impressive. So this thing must have a lot of power, a lot of lift. I don't know any of the engine size information or anything like that, but that's called the Mount Batten class SRN-4 hovercraft. And there were two of them, and apparently they've just been retired.
Man, and so, okay, I was going to ask why they didn't just use a conventional sea craft of some sort, but that really makes more sense if they can go 70 knots.
They're covering apparently some rough water, and they're doing it fast, and I guess these have been replaced by hydrofoil boats, which are, you know, I don't know if I want to say similar or not, but they raise up out of the water, and again, impressive, you know, marine technology, but not a hovercraft.
What on earth is preventing us from driving hovercrafts today? This seems like the perfect. Wait, hear me out. It seems like a really good compromise over the flying car issue. You know, there'd be enough flight for me. Enough ground for you.
It does, and it seems like you could have a relatively small engine.
Sure,
and you could get between point A and point B quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
That seems pretty logical, and what would be cooler than to be able to cut across a lake, you know, and you know, shave some time off of of your commute or whatever.
Definitely.
Seems like an interesting idea, and it seems like it would work. It really would. And I actually didn't know that it wouldn't work until I read, you know, this little bit about it last night. There are two main factors that are probably holding us back. I'm sure there's more than this, but the two main ideas that I read about were most roads right now are crowned for drainage, and the shape of the road would just mean that the hovercraft would continually slide off to the side of the road, left or right. You would have to perfectly straddle the crown of the road, or the road would have to be, you know, perfectly flat in order for this to work. Not perfectly, but flat. And the way the shape of the road is right now, it just wouldn't work. And you can imagine that they don't do well on hills either, because you've got a fan trying to push a lot of weight uphill. They're meant for flat ground, other than, you know, the ocean swells that we talked about before, because it pretty much is breaking through that.
Right. Okay.
That's what makes them valuable to someone near a lake, is that, you know, the lake is generally flat.
Mm-hmm.
You're not talking about, you know, something that has, you know, 10-foot swells on a lake. You're talking about, you know, a couple little ripples here or there. That's fine. You may have to go over the occasional rock on the shore. That's fine. You know, boulder. Depends on the size of it, but for the most part, you'll be able to go straight from land into the water and then back again without any difficulty.
So my life on the coast of Salt Lake City could work with on the coast of Salt Lake in Salt Lake City could work pretty well, right?
Yeah.
If I had hovercraft?
Of course, yeah. That's very flat, so yeah, you'd be all right.
Okay, I feel like you might put the nail in the coffin.
Well, no, I just mean the hills or the thing that
that's
really
the
gets
second
it down.
One.
Yeah, the hills. If you can't climb a hill very well in a hovercraft, so
yeah, you're right.
You've got a little fan at the back that's pushing all that weight up the hill. You can imagine that doesn't go so well. It's you know, the lift air is still there. Mm-hmm. You just don't have the thrust that you need for that, and that comes from, you know, friction via the wheels and of a typical car. And just doesn't work out quite so well with the hovercraft.
And that's why the Audi Shark is such an unconventional vehicle. And if it ever, now let's just say, as we know, concept cars are pretty much a lottery,
mm-hmm.
you know, in terms of both the payoff and the odds of winning and becoming production. Right?
Correct, yeah.
So if this car somehow won, hovercraft, force of habit there, right? If this hovercraft actually won the great lottery from concept to production, it would be very specialized use, huh?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Well, first, I mean, when you look at it, you realize that it doesn't have the skirting that we normally see on a hovercraft. Right. It's not a normal hovercraft in that sense, or what we've, you know, become accustomed to as a normal hovercraft. So I don't know exactly how this one achieves the thrust that it does, or the thrust and the lift.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not entirely positive that there's not much information about the operation of this thing, because it is a concept still, and really it's just, you know, on paper really at this point.
Right, it's a good idea.
It is a very good idea, but as far as executing that idea, pretty difficult. So mm-hmm. we'll see, but it's interesting, and you know, I wish that this guy has more opportunity to design.
Oh, yeah.
In the future, because it seems like he's got some pretty good ideas.
Three design contests.
Three winning design ideas.
Yeah, 26 years old.
Yeah.
What am I doing with my life, man? What am I doing? No, I'm kidding. But that is very impressive. And I would this is a kind of guy I'd like to keep tabs on and see what contest number four is. I really hope he doesn't give up.
Yeah, me too. I hope he sticks with it.
So I guess that pretty much wraps up our look at this concept and our basic overview of how hovercrafts work. We've got a little bit of a listener mail as well about an earlier episode.
That's right. Yeah, so you're talking about the slot car.
I am talking about the slot cars.
Yeah, this is interesting. I got a note right here. Let me grab for it here. But we did get an interesting piece of mail from Andrew, and Andrew is from Asheville, North Carolina. And Andrew says, Andrew's 15, by the way.
Okay.
Andrew says, in the slot car podcast, you asked how many track pieces you would need to go around the world. And I guess he must have figured it out, because he's got a number here. He says, if you use 6-inch track pieces, you would need 263,007,360 pieces of track in order to get around the world.
763
pieces.
306. Okay, so yeah. I'm about 263,007,354 pieces short, but we're off to a good start.
That's a lot of pieces. I guess it's impressive you sent.
That's
that
a really
out,
cool fact.
Yeah, that is. That's neat. So, anyways, yeah. I like to get mail like that. It's just simple, straight to the point. He's got, he answered our question.
And we, you know what, we love facts like that.
Yeah, we do. And I mean, you see, we read them on air, and Andrew picked up on that, so he sent in his answer.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you, Andrew. Do we have anything else?
Or? No, that's the only piece of reader mail I've got right now.
Okay,
but there's a ton of it, and you know, we're doing our best to get to it all. So if we haven't answered you yet, hang in there. We'll get to you. I promise.
Let me slip one in, though, because I've got to make an apology here.
Oh.
Tim from Georgia wrote in. This is my bad, Scott, on the And he says the contender for the world's largest slot car set is in Discover Mills Mall rather than the Mall of Georgia.
Oh.
That was my bad, everybody. If you are driving to the Mall of Georgia right now looking for that slot car set, I apologize. Turn around. Discover Mills. But thanks so much for writing in, Tim. And I guess that pretty much does wrap it up for us today. Thanks so much for giving us a listen. If you have any questions or any suggestions for an upcoming episode, please write to both of us at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the High Speed Stuff blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.